The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, welcome. It's Sunday. You're listening to a edition of The Main Course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. We're engineered by Liz in the studio. Liz, are you still awake? Liz, have I been that boring that quickly? She's there. All right. But it's good. Liz is there. This isn't going to be for nothing. I'm just back from a really fun opportunity to be on Leonard Lopate's show on WNYC. And damn, that studio is legit. I went in there all like, man, I don't know, man. Like, what makes them so special? And the second I walked in that building, I was like, oh my God, that is a very serious station. Everyone's so professional. He asked great questions. So you could learn all about the book, The Carnivore's Manifesto, that just came out. That was exciting. They asked me about the Museum of Food and Drink and the Heritage Radio Network. So it was a very professional interview. I'm really excited about the membership drive that's happening on Heritage Radio Network. This is their membership month, and I know for $120 you get a beautiful tote bag. And you know, for all these hosts that come in each week and do their, you know, we have 30 hours of live programming every week, and for all the interns and writers who come in to write stories for the news component, and people, you know, I think this radio station actually makes some people happy, you know, happier in life, thanks to all the great content. And, you know, the way to pay back that is to donate some money, like $60 or $120. So we really encourage everybody to support this burgeoning food network. And, well, that's basically the intro. I am very excited to have a guy who I've been working with actually for a decade, but he's never been on the station before, and it's a real honor. I have great respect for all the places he's worked and for all the great work he does. His name is Josh Lorano. Hey, Josh.
Hey.
How's it going?
Good.
So Josh Lorano has been working for the B&B family for nearly 10 years. Starting at Lupa as a line cook and then moving to Del Posto, where he became a sous chef. He has spent the last few years, you know, at Babbo, and then he went to Terry Market, and now he's back at Lupa. So we're going to, as the chef there. So very, very exciting, fascinating career. And I guess I'll start a little bit before we get into the B&B empire. I just found out that your mom was the Knish queen.
She was.
So tell us about how she got that that title.
So I grew up early on, my formative years, in West Virginia on a commune until like second or third grade.
What's that mean, a commune? I know what it means.
Communal living. I think it was a bunch of Jewish people from New Jersey who wanted to get out of the area and kind of live on their own and live off the land. And so at some point we moved to Morgantown, West Virginia, when I had to go to school. Mm-hmm. And they had this, like I said, Secretary of Food who kind of ran around the state giving these really unique and special certificates. And my mom may have been the only person in West Virginia making Knish at the time. But yeah, so she has a certificate. It's proudly displayed in her kitchen.
So what became of it? I mean, that's interesting to break off the grid like that and find other people who agree with that kind of mindset. And just, did someone purchase a property there or did they rent
right,
it?
Right, so a bunch of them purchased a property in Calhoun County.
Okay. You know, do you remember it?
Vaguely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember one time when my grandparents came from West Orange, New Jersey, and the neighbor's pigs ran loose all throughout the commune.
Wow.
So, but it was a unique experience. It kind of gave me a fundamental appreciation for organic food and living off the land and working with seasonal and beautiful ingredients.
But there, as with most communes, there is a dark side somewhere, and I hear that they were vegetarians.
There was no bacon.
So that's interesting. I mean, how do you view? I mean, I have a chapter in the book I just wrote called "Vegetarians, You Have Blood on Your Hands," and you know, it was kind of poking fun at them while still, of course, respecting them. But what's your take on the whole vegetarian movement? I mean, are you still one, and what do you think about it?
I am not. I mean, I kind of grew up, you know, with a mother who really wants to give you only organic and non-sugar ingredients. You want white bread and frosted flakes and a hamburger. So I feel like I was deprived a certain part of that growing up. Not that it's a good thing to eat a lot of it, but a little bit of anything in moderation can be good. So for me, I mean, I try and eat when I can the meats that you guys stand behind, you know, locally, organically, you know, delicious meat. I mean, fundamentally, as a chef and as a consumer, it really comes down to the taste of the product. You know, we can think about it ethically all we want, but any movement or any food movement, meat movement, isn't going to be successful unless the product tastes delicious.
Is that one of the issues grass-fed beef has in your experience as a chef?
I think so. I mean, there's just not enough fat in it. And, you know, the beef on its own can be delicious, and it can be great for certain preparations, maybe raw or something like that, where you can use a leaner type. But, you know, if you want that nice kind of charred, fatty steak, you need something that's maybe grass-starred but grain-finished.
What about bison? Will it never take off in restaurants because of that reason?
I think it's just too lean. You know, I think that people, especially in this area and in North America, for example, have come to expect and appreciate a certain flavor profile when it comes to beef. But I think that there are other ways to use it, maybe like a carpaccio or a tartare, where you can incorporate some kind of fat and flavor back into it.
I see. So I was going to ask what you would recommend to all these people at home as a chef of all these great restaurants, what you would recommend to doctor up like a ribeye, for instance.
Right.
I mean, so they, because this grass-fed movement is growing, what do you do to it? What are some creative ways to make things?
I think you need to incorporate a little more fat into it.
So you just put some
pancetta or bacon or something maybe around it to kind of keep it moist. Often I probably would like to cook those cuts off the bone so you can cook them fairly quickly.
I see. So they don't have as much time to lose the little juice they have.
Exactly.
All right. That's interesting. So cook it very quickly, bone off.
Bone off, I think. Because sometimes when you cook things on the bone, they take a little bit longer. You get a nice quick hot sear on it. Couple slices, maybe throw a little olive oil on at the end.
And I say for the people who grind up the meat, you know, there was that article in the New York Times that's saying, you know, 80-20, sometimes 70-30 can be the mix. But with grass-fed, maybe it should even be 60-40 or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there's even enough fat on it to get it. But so how did you get on with the B&B guys? I mean, so your first gig with them was with Lupa back in the Mark Ladner days?
Yeah.
Wow.
So after college, I spent some time in the fine art business.
Okay.
Did that for a while.
Were you an artist?
I was not.
Okay.
It was more of exploiting commercial part of the artist. So I worked with a fine art gallery and we sold art. And I realized it just wasn't something I wanted to do. Wasn't passionate about it. Was bartending in the city. Went to culinary school. My first job was at Lupa. Granted, I was a little older than some people at that time. I started when I was 28 or 29 there. And
you just gave your resume. You walked in.
I walked in, and they hired me. And from there, you know, I kind of just wanted to learn every part of it. I mean, I think that, you know, you have a couple options as a young cook starting out. You can work and then party and then, you know, not do anything in between. Or you can work and you can read and you can figure out, all right, I overcooked this. Why did I do it? Mm-hmm. What are the fundamentals behind it? And you're continually kind of educating yourself. Mm-hmm. So maybe that kind of helped propel me a little faster. And then from there, after they opened Del Posto, I went and I worked there.
That was a very challenging restaurant to be there from the beginning because of its sheer size. It's two stories, massive kitchens, keeping the food hot through those long waiter walks to the tables. And then it was just trying to be a four-star Italian restaurant.
Right. And I think that, you know, I wasn't there from the very beginning, but I came in maybe a year and a half later. And I think that now they've really developed what they want to be. And they kind of, like anything like that, it takes time to go through the process. But it was a great fine dining experience. And then I think where I really kind of came into my own was at Babbo.
Yes, which you were there for a long time. That's where we would engage through Heritage Foods. I would call you many mornings, and you would pick up and place your order.
Right.
So, that's working always with Frank throughout the years.
Yeah, Frank was there. He's always been there.
Frank Langello. He's been a guest on the show.
Yep. And I really kind of fundamentally got the ethos of the B&B group.
At Babbo.
Like, it really kind of came into its own. Like,
what do you mean? How is that?
I mean, I think that, you know, Babbo is unique. And so working for all these different locations and all these different restaurants, there's the, you know, there's a certain way to do things. But then when you go to Babbo, there's the Babbo way. And one of the reasons it's so good is that it's consistent.
Oh, my God. Same order for a decade with us.
Right. It's the same meal. So if I had my anniversary there 10 years ago, I get very similar meal. Just as delicious, just, you know, some of the waiters are the same, the food runners are the same, and there's something to be said for that. I mean, at the end of the day, what we do as a chef and working in a restaurant is really from a simple level. People come in, they order food, we send it to them, hopefully they like it, we do it a couple hundred times a night.
Mm-hmm. And I heard it has the most difficult pasta station in the world or the city or whatever, the U.S.
Right.
So, I mean, why describe to our listeners, I mean, it must be a very tough kitchen to work in as well, to have so many dishes on the menu that you fire right away.
Right. I mean, the menu is huge. I mean, it's kind of like an encyclopedia or a dictionary of Italian cuisine. You have a lot of different dishes. Some of them, I mean, there's so many classics on the menu that they can't take them off.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sheer size and variety. And it's a one-person station. It's hot. You're in a corner. But the guy who's been doing it has been doing it for 7 years. So
He's not going anywhere.
No.
And what did you learn there? You just learned the sheer diversity of Italian cuisine and kind of the art of the apprentice, the keeping things consistent, becoming a master of very simple pastas and things of that nature.
And also realizing that when you get to a certain point, as a chef, you're running the restaurant, being organized. I mean, with so many different dishes, being on top of that part of it, the business side of it, was a whole different aspect.
Mm-hmm. And now tell me, how did you end up at Terry Market then, which is the B&B big kind of like food store in Terry, New York, right?
In Porchester.
Porchester, in Connecticut.
And so there was an opportunity to go. I mean, I'd been the sous at Babbo for almost 4 years. I was looking for another opportunity in the company, and this one came up. And it was a really good experience. It was, you know, it's a half retail market. We bake up bread up there. We do things for the restaurants from a commissary perspective.
Oh, okay.
So it was a unique experience to get into that part of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's dealing with all these white people up in fancy neighborhoods, right? So it must have been a demanding crowd.
Well, I mean, I think any crowd is demanding, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the difference is that in the restaurant, there's a buffer, the waiter and the servers. At the market, there's no buffer. So, and I mean, it's good. It helped me grow as a chef to kind of see, you know, because you can't just say I cook food and I'm a chef. You mm-hmm. know, we are responsible for the entire dining experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of got a little closer in touch with some of our customer base, some of the people that come in, and some of the issues that servers have mm-hmm. as well. So kind of bridging that gap was really helpful for me.
Very interesting. Well, we are with Josh Lorano, the chef of Lupa. We're going to talk about Lupa next. Patrick Martins, you're listening to The Main Course. We're going to take a brief break and come back for the second part of the interview. Love is true.
You're listening to Mood Swings by Cloud.
Host of Sharp and Hot. Do you love us? Do you really? Do you count on us for real food news and content? Well, we need your help. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a not-for-profit organization, which means we depend on underwriting, grants, and the support of members like you to keep broadcasting. Help keep our voice alive. Visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button today. We promise to never stop in our mission to create a world that's more sustainable, equitable, and delicious by expanding the way eaters think about food. Thanks for listening, and thanks for showing your support.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Wow. Andrew WK. Well, you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. I'm the host of the main course, Patrick Martins. We are in studio today with Josh Lorano, and he's been telling us about his work originally at Lupa and then at Del Posto and then at Babbo for a number of years at Terry Market, all within the B&B group. And then they called you in to become the chef of Lupa. So tell us, how did that happen and how's it been going? It's been 3 months now?
Yep, 3 months. You know, it's kind of like putting on an old pair of shoes. You walk in and there's the prep guys. Some of the prep guys are the same. The food runners have been there forever. So I think that it was helpful for me to understand the formula that Lupa has and that it's been so successful for so long. Just trying to keep up the same level of food and service that people have become accustomed to over the last 15 years.
Because describe that restaurant. It's very unique. I mean, for years it was never reviewed, and then it falls into niche almost by itself. For instance, are many of the menu items still the same? Very simple, pasta, cacio e pepe. How much of the menu will you change, and how much is not allowed to be changed because the New Yorkers come to expect it?
I mean, I think there's 50 to 60% of the menu are dishes that were put on from day one. Some of them are interpretations of Roman classics. Some of them are really a true identity of Rome. We have this saying where some of the dishes we like to say Rome away from Rome. So it gives you an opportunity.
Give us an example of the ones that are truly
pastas, the bucatini amatriciana, the spaghetti carbonara. I mean, they're truly classic dishes. I mean, before I took the job, I went to Rome for a week, just eating and drinking and being as Roman as I could be. Rome, like any other great food cities in the world and throughout Italy, is a very seasonally driven restaurant. But we have a lot of dishes on there that are, if not as good or better than some places you'll get in Rome.
And the same as Babbo? I mean, do they make those same pastas, and are they done differently at the
restaurants? Every restaurant, again, has their own little ethos and fundamental philosophy on how to do pastas. Mm-hmm. So I know there's the Babbo way, there's the Lupa way.
How do they differ? I mean, is there a general theme, and is one use better ingredients or one?
No, I mean, I think that so at Lupa we probably focus a little more on dried pastas.
Okay.
Less stuffed and fresh. We still have an excellent selection of fresh and filled pastas, but Rome is known for using dried spaghetti and dried bucatini, and so mm-hmm. other restaurants use it, but it's probably one of the main focuses of our restaurant.
Yeah, very interesting. And what are some of the dishes that you had studied over the years mm-hmm. at Babbo, for instance, and said, you know, this is fascinating. I mean, I once got an email from you, I believe, about goat.
Right.
And it was a goat recipe that you had found. So, I mean, obviously you were saying earlier that you were a student of the culture. So what were some of the regions that excite you and that, you know, you want to try to implement whenever possible?
Right. So at Lupa, you know, we really want to try and be as true to a Roman restaurant
Roman.
As possible. So we really try and focus on food in and around Lazio. My wife's family is from Sicily.
Okay.
So that's a region that really interests me. A lot of the cooking I do at home, a lot of the cooking I do with her family, I just like that kind of spicy flavor profile that they bring. But I also have really found a new appreciation for Roman food.
Mm-hmm.
And it really encompasses a wide variety. I mean, there's a lot of the like Apician spices and some Asian influences as far as the spice profiles that we use.
Okay.
I mean, they really kind of went and took some of the best of food regions all over the world and brought it back to Rome and made it their own.
Hmm. They did. Well, it's like they're New York City, right?
Exactly.
So, and it's in the center,
mm-hmm.
More or less, of the country. Well, very interesting. And did you, is there opportunity to go outside of that culture? I mean, it is a little bit of all of it.
Yeah. I mean, like Babbo, for example, is much more of a diversified menu. I mean, they'll kind of pull the best of all of Italy.
Mm-hmm.
At Lupa, we try where we can. I mean, obviously, we're not in Rome, so we're not a Roman restaurant, but we try and make it as if you were a Roman chef living in New York. You would use as much of the ingredients you could that made sense for you in that Roman style.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And what about transition? How much time do you spend in the kitchen, and how much time are you upstairs with all the paperwork, the responsibilities, the organization at Lupa, and will that change over time?
Well, I think that any chef spends more time than they'd like doing paperwork and organizing and not enough time cooking. But, you know, I'm on the line every night. I'm expediting every night. You know, and I try and come in and get my paperwork done early so that when the cooks come in, I can work with them and we can work on recipes together. I try and make it as much of a collaborative effort as possible
mm-hmm.
And try and get his input from, you know, I think that finding talent in this industry is becoming harder and harder.
Mm-hmm.
Not finding talent, but keeping talent because there's so many more opportunities. So, you know, working with people, letting them kind of come through the process, I think is important to keeping a great staff.
Very interesting. And now tell me a touch about the schedule of that place, because it's a tiny place, but has a big downstairs. I mean, it's not where you would typically think a restaurant would be. You know, it's in a kind of small brownstone, and people live right upstairs.
Right.
And tell us, what is the schedule? I mean, is basically that a 24-hour operation practically breakdowns and sauce prep and all that?
We pretty much start around 7 every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a crew that works until 4. And we have another crew that comes in at 4:35, and they work till later on in the night. And then overnight, we have a crew that comes in and cleans up all night.
Yeah. Well, very, very interesting. So, yeah, pretty big operation. How many people is it total?
It's probably about in the kitchen on the line. There's, you know, 5 or 6 people, another 15, 20 prep people.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of prep going on. We do a lot of... you know, we make our own testa, which is head cheese, which, mm-hmm. you know, we buy a lot of.
2 split heads a week. That's a lot. 2, 4, sometimes more. Yeah.
Yeah.
You get a lot of testa out of one head.
We do a considerable amount of guanciale. So
that's, I love the pork jowl. God.
Yeah.
It's a pork jowl, bacon, jowl, right. You know, guanciale, all that. So let's, you know, my last question, I always like doing this kind of like a rapid fire round.
Great.
I'll just mention you four names of four people and you tell me, you know, what you've learned from them or anything that comes to mind. So, Jason Denton, one of the people that started Lupa and you work with him now. So, right. Tell me what you've learned from him.
Just a fundamental appreciation for the overall dining experience. You know, understanding that people come into your restaurant, they expect to a certain level of service and experience, and if you can't repeat that on a consistent level, they're not going to come back.
Very interesting. Yeah, well, he taught me once, if you don't have a drink in your hand within 5 minutes, the restaurant's failed.
Right, and that too.
My wife hates the beginning of meals with me at restaurants because I'm like, it's been 5 minutes. She's like, this isn't a Jason Denton restaurant. I'm like, I don't care. It's a truth. But Mark Laudner.
Mark was inspiring to work for, you know, one of the truly talented and great chefs in this city. You know, one of the things he told me one time was, Josh, plate with purpose. And so kind of making sure that, you know, there's a time to joke around, there's a time to be casual and flippant, but when it comes to doing the task at hand, be fully focused.
Fully focused. Puff with care.
Yes.
That's the Thomas cartoon episode, my son's favorite one. Joe Bastianich.
From Joe, I've learned that, you know, at the end of the day, I think I said it before, very fundamental principle of the restaurant business is our job is not only to put out delicious food, but it's also to put out delicious food so that we can still make a profit and do it over and over consistently every night.
Every night, consistency. And, of course, Mario.
So from Mario, I've learned one of the biggest things he told me was, you know, make sure that you find time to be with your family and to, you know, wake up in the morning, cook breakfast for your kids, but also that, you know, what we do is about making people happy. People come in and they look to us to give them a good experience. Whatever they're doing, whatever they got going on at home, our job is to make sure they came in and left happier than when they came in.
Very interesting. So tell us new things that people can look at. They might have been Lupa 100 times in their lives, but haven't been in the past year. So what are some reasons to come back?
We just put on a pasta tasting menu. It's 5 pastas and sorbet for $49. A bunch of classic dishes as well as a few little interpretations. Come hungry. It's very filling and I think a great value great way to experience Lupa. We have a wine dinner coming up this Tuesday, which is sold out right away, but look for more of them to come up in August and September.
You have an email list?
We do.
Sign up on the website?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And the wine dinner is going to be with myself and Jeff Porter, the wine director for Del Posto, and he's involved with Babbo and Lupa and Otto. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to do all wine. This one's wines from Lazio, but we'll kind of venture out, but still staying true to that Roman ideology.
Nice. Well, thank God Rome's a big city because you get a lot to pull from. Well, Josh Lorano, congratulations on all your success and consistency within the group and within bringing great food to so many people for so many years. Everyone should go to Lupa. You've been listening to the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. Thanks to Liz in the studio, and we will be back next week with another edition of The Main Course.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.